and welcome to the Future in Focus radio show starring Michael Vidakin, founder of the forward-thinking research firm, futureinfocus.com. He gives us access to one of the largest bodies of foresight research in the world. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, your co-host, proud to be helping companies understand the future so they can make better decisions today. So sit back and get ready to glimpse tomorrow. According to Dr. Andy Hines, a futurist and professor at the University of Houston, the concept of work will be changing in the future. How can your company prepare for what's on the horizon? That's what you'll find out today on the Future in Focus radio show, where your host and the CEO of Future in Focus, Michael Vidakin, will interview Andy. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, founder of the Incandescent Radio Network, and I cannot wait to hear this conversation. Take it away, Mike and Andy.
Well, thanks, Hope. And Andy, I got to tell you, I'm really excited to have you on the radio show. We've worked together a little bit in the past, and honestly, you're a big role model for me. You literally wrote the book about thinking about the future. I think that's literally the title, is Thinking About the Future. And I read it cover to cover, and it's, you know, really an amazing guide to helping individuals and professionals, you know, really put a methodology in place to actually understand sort of the trends and the impacts. And, you know, it's really fascinating. So just thank you for being on with us today and helping us learn a little bit about the future of work and the workforce.
Well, thanks, Mike. Indeed, the future of work can't be a topic that's more relevant and, for me, more interesting. So I am really excited to dig in.
Great. Well, you know, maybe just start with sort of getting into what's sort of next on the horizon for us. So if we look out the next decade or further, demographics are certainly one of the big factors that are changing. Can you talk specifically about sort of the big challenges companies are going to have to deal with as it relates to demographics, you know, the younger millennials moving in, the boomers moving out?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So there's still some labor force growth left in the emerging markets and then what we call some of the bottom of the pyramid countries, some of the lesser developed countries. But in the rich countries, the U.S., Europe, Japan, the labor force growth is already leveling off and even declining in some of them. So Japan, Spain, and Italy, we actually have declining populations. I mean, the same would be true for the U.S. if it wasn't for immigration. Now, you know, as a futurist, we like to peek ahead. So if we go just a little bit ahead, out to 2050, global population growth is expected to level off at around 9 billion. Now, that's a pretty significant development. I mean, we've been just so used to growth that we've taken it for granted. But here, you know, while it's a little bit beyond our immediate horizon, in sight is a world in which, you know, the number of people is not growing anymore. Another trend is the growth of automation and basically the reducing the need for jobs. So we have two major trends, right? In the long-term future, a smaller workforce, but maybe a good complementary trend is less need for jobs due to automation. So it's all into the focus of the next 5, 10, 25 years is it's finding the right people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's already a lot of talk in Japan about robotics assisting an aging population. So that's clearly one of the solutions that we're looking at.
Yeah, so another way to put it is it's the numbers game really isn't the issue as much in the short term as it's the quality game. It's like finding the right people. So I think we've got a nice situation in terms of the numbers, but, you know, how do I find the person that I want to be core to my organization? I think that's the big challenge ahead.
That's interesting. So basically and it doesn't seem like in the workplace or in the in HR systems out there, it sounds like some of them are working at trying to find a solution to this. But I'll tell you, from watching friends and even siblings go through the job searching process, it just doesn't seem like there's a good system in place right now to actually match people up with, you know, companies that are looking for certain skill sets and matching up the people that actually have those skill sets.
No, that's a great point. And, you know, it's funny, in a lot of the working sessions I've done with organizations when we talk about, you know, future talent issues, one of the solutions that the groups inevitably come up with is some form of like a match.com, mm-hmm. but for the workforce, right, where you can find, you know, organizations needing this, workers needing this, and, you know, can we have a cup of coffee and get to know each other, you know, kind of
yeah,
like
absolutely.
That, you know, referral service. And, you know, I think it's kind of like some HR systems, not all, of course, being caught in the old, you know, the old model and not recognizing that, you know, that, if you will, the balance of power shifting towards the talent, right? And you know, so really it's kind of reorient as a company, how do I reorient my thinking towards saying, you know what, I'm going to have to maybe make some exceptions to the way I do things because I need to get the talent I need, and that because that's where my competitive advantage is.
Right, and that actually sort of fits into sort of the future organizational structures. You know, if your companies can't just operate the way that they've always been, they have to be flatter, they have to be able to respond much faster. Some of what we're seeing is a lot of move towards using a lot more contractors, a lot more experts, because you can't just bring in experts as employees, pay them, and then lay them off a year later. You know, that model doesn't really work that well for companies.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those things that sounds good in theory. All right, so we're going to have a small core, and we're going to bring in people when we need them, and then, you know, let them go when we don't. And, you know, in theory, that's a great model. In practice, it's really difficult to make that work effectively, and which, you know, kind of circles back to that point about the need for talent. You know, can I find somebody who can work like that, who can plug in without, you know, 6 months of, what, 6 weeks of training or whatever it might be? We can kind of plug in, hit the ground running, you know, get to work with a team and produce results, and without a lot of hand-holding, without a lot of instruction. And, you know, so, you know, to actually make that network model work, it's not a trivial matter, and it really does take the investment that I think companies spend up front in finding that right person, you know, will definitely pay dividends, or having that person in their network that they can contact when they need them.
Yeah, in terms of the network model, you know, I mean, if you can put in place a good enough system that, you know, does what Match.com does, right, or, you know, a Match.com for jobs where it helps people you know, find exactly what they need when they want it. I mean, that system certainly sounds like it would work well. Are there any other organizational structures or sort of new business models that you're seeing in terms of how, let's say, corporations or even smaller businesses are trying to orient themselves to compete better in sort of this new era?
Well, so one of the other popular models out there, you know, something like TaskRabbit, right? I mean, breaking down, instead of hiring worker for, you know, a project, you hire workers for tasks, right? So you're breaking it down to a, you know, really down to a micro level. So, I mean, so I think there's different ways to kind of assemble or, you know, assemble, disassemble, and reassemble. I mean, I think for me, a helpful model that I think kind of sets the can help organizations orient around this emerging future is you think of the Hollywood film production where, you know, it's time to make a new movie, producer, director says, all right, that's, you know, time to go recruit your network. And, you know, they get on the Rolodex, the old fashioned Rolodex, if you will, and start, you know, organizing people. And then, you know, level two of the network recruits level three recruits level four. And so basically, like, you know, a team, an organization kind of puts it's almost like a self-assembling organization. And really, to go one step beyond that, you know, what are the new interesting models? It's seen really, I think the leading edge is really around self-managing teams and organizations where there's literally, and talking about flat, there is literally no hierarchy. Where basically these network types of arrangements organize themselves, manage themselves, lead themselves, compensate themselves. And it kind of almost was like, how could that possibly work? I think there are, you know, there are small, like what we call as futurists, there are small weak signals or leading edge examples of where that's worked on a, well, on a fairly not insignificant scale, certainly not extreme, but I would say that's kind of the foreshadow of where we're going next.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There was a Wall Street Journal article recently about Zappos trying to conform to that model, and a lot of employees at first struggled with this idea of, well, who's my boss if nobody's my boss? And working in small teams and basically choosing individual leaders to lead certain tasks, they would almost self-select, and people would come up with ideas. But it is very interesting to think how do large companies with 50,000, 100,000 employees, how can they possibly change that model to what a smaller company like Zappos might be able to do, you know, into that self-assembling network?
Yeah, I don't think it's certainly not an untrivial matter. Although I would put it this way to any of our listeners who have been in large organizations at one time or another, have you kind of maybe joked to a colleague or a friend saying, "Yeah, I haven't talked to my boss since the last annual review"? And I think there are lots and lots of people out there who don't realize that they're self-managing, but they really are. Yeah, so I would say to kind of sum that point up, I think that, you know, that there's probably more of that going on than we realize. But to your point, when it's just sort of thrown at somebody, I think it's a shock, and it takes some time and adjustment to get used to it.
Yeah, and that's true for a lot of the ways that companies and really individuals need to adapt to the trends that are happening around us. I mean, you can't just keep doing the same thing that you've always done in the face of a changing world. So something's going to have to give. You know, let me ask you about the companies to sort of the idea of the physical workspace.
Mm.
You know, there's obviously been a lot of growth. WeWork has kind of captured a lot of headlines. I think everybody is familiar with co-working spaces, and whether they're in a large company or not, they've seen the open floor plans sort of all around. You know, think that is going to replace the traditional, you know, office cubicle and, you know, closed office doors sort of more down the road, or sort of what are some of the reasons you think that people are moving, gravitating towards that that sort of open floor plan layout and more of these co-working spaces?
To me, I think the traditional office concept is, you know, it's in hospice care right now. it's not quite dead, but it's preparing itself. And I'm not suggesting that there won't be such a thing as an office, but the concept, as you suggested, of putting people in cubicles and really designing structures to keep people from being distracted by one another, I think that concept is the one that's in hospice care. So what we've seen, there's really two things that are going on. One, it's actually the needs of the organization moving, you know, the structure away from the old, you know, keep people apart model. And it's just the opposite, that, like, what we want to design our office space so that when people do come to the physical office, they're interacting. And it's all driven by information and communications technology, right? There's no real physical reason that we need to be in an office because, you know, we can do all of our work. In most cases, we can do our work on our devices, right? So we can be anywhere. So we're untethered from the need to be at the office in most cases, or in pure knowledge work case. So then it says, yeah, but, you know, we'd all agree that it's good to interact with colleagues, and that's an important thing to getting work done. So, you know, the idea of the office of the future is that, you know, when we do physically meet and come together, And in many, many cases, that's going to include video telepresence from our colleagues who can't physically be there, but will be integrated into that sort of group setting. So we're going to design spaces to be collaborative. I mean, so we're going to tear down the cubicles and, you know, design the space in a way that encourages interaction. If we need to be solitary, What's clearly happened is you know, workers have voted with their feet. They've gone to co-working collectives. They've gone to their home office. They've gone to Starbucks or their favorite cafe, or they might go to the beach. You know, so those two things, right? Organization needs to get people together. The workers want the freedom to work, you know, where they're most comfortable. So you put those two things together, and the traditional office is on its deathbed.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, if we have any listeners that are cubicle manufacturers, you know, good luck, guys. You should, you know, actually be thinking about more collaborative open spaces, you know, rather than, you know, small single pod cubicles. Actually, the technology is really an interesting part as well, because there's actually a lot of, you know, a lot of new technologies that are impacting the way people work. You mentioned, you know, well, basically being able to work remotely, telepresence, you know, anything that lets us work remotely. But what are some of the other emerging technologies you're seeing that are going to have a big influence?
Yeah, I would definitely, if we can allow the heading of collaboration technologies, I would say that's really where, in terms of the office, that's where the big bang for the buck will be. And I know the concept that you and I talked about, Mike, is the integration of the virtual and the real. And I think, you know, for the next decade, if I was going to really spend some time thinking about, you know, thinking about an issue that really has a lot of payoff, it's like, how do we seamlessly integrate folks who are in a physical space with the folks who are in a remote space and make that seamless? Now, I've been teaching the integrated or what you call hybrid, where we have classrooms where we have students in the classroom, students all over the world calling in remotely. I've been doing for over a dozen years, and you know, each year or two, things get a little bit, technology gets a little better, but you know, it's still not seamless. There's still a clear us versus them kind of ethos, and while it's gotten better, it's not there yet. And I think, you know, technically speaking, within the next decade, I think we can crack that nut. I think we can make it, you know, not identical, but where it's much more seamless and routine, and we don't even think about it. Of course, there's going to be some folks who are going to come in remotely, and you know, it's easy to interact with them, and we don't have to go to a separate room. We don't have to turn on a separate device. You know, it's all integrated into our normal workday. I think that's the vision that, you know, that's what's out there for us in the next 5 or 10 years, and I think that there's a lot of payoff from that. I think that's really where there's some bang for the buck.
Sure, it seems like a lot of movies have gotten it right, but it's obviously easier for movies to make pretend technology, and you know, what would actually work isn't necessarily here yet.
Yeah, and some of it's just plain cost, right? I mean, if you spent enough money, you can make it seamless, but you know, that's not going to work on, you know, on a mass scale, and that's really what we're talking about. I mean, certainly at the leading edge, I think I'm sure we could find some pretty good examples of how it. You know, we say the future's already here; it's just unevenly distributed, right? So we need to distribute this to the, you know, to the routine, if we're in my case the classroom, but in the routine, you know, workforce, so that everybody can do it. And it's such, again, the key thing is it's so ubiquitous you don't even think about it. You don't have to go do something; it's just there. Best leadership and the best technology is one that you don't even notice. Right? You know, a great leader is one who leads, and people don't even know they're being led. You know, and a great technology is one that enables whatever it enables, and you don't even notice that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's what we're looking for in terms of this virtual real integration.
Absolutely. Actually, on the quote, it's you know, it was Arthur C. Clarke, and he said, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic." You know, so I think that definitely captures sort of the spirit of talking about here. And in terms of, you know, you were talking about education, you know, especially the applications to education, looking ahead also, thinking about what education people are going to need for sort of the workforce of the future, job skills, jobs training, what kind of, you know, skills do you think are going to be in high demand? And
mm-hmm.
You know, maybe also talk a little bit about how we're going to be teaching that. You know, how's the teaching part of it going to change?
Sure. And if I had to say, like, what's the meta skill is reskilling, right? Or the ability to learn new skills. So, I mean, just being able to learn something new and get up to speed quickly, that's the core from which all else derives, right? So being good at reskilling. And if I had to name some specific, you know, some things that when you look at jobs of the future and higher demand, certainly critical thinking, you know, being able to, if you will, get at assumptions and deconstruct and come at things with a different perspective. But I would also add the counter to that is what we call integrative thinking. So not only, you know, it's one thing to tear down an argument or to, you know, analyze something to death, but can you put it back together? Can you integrate from multiple perspectives, you know, many sources of input? So in critical and integrative thinking, I think, kind of go together as a package. Certainly creative thinking, and if anybody in the audience is saying, well, I'm not creative, the research clearly shows that, you know, while we all may have some different abilities, that we can definitely learn how to be more creative. So it's kind of like, you know, we can play basketball. It doesn't mean we're going to make it to the NBA, but we can be better if we practice, and creativity is much the same. So that's a big one. Systems thinking, you know, the ability to see how things fit together, how systems work, how if something happens over there, over here, how it affects what happens over there, you know, A leads to B, leads to C, and, you know, just being able to see beyond the kind of, you know, linear thinking and kind of pattern recognition might be another way to put it. So those are some of the skills that we think are really key. Well, of course, I almost forgot the biggest one, which would be foresight, right? Of course, the ability to anticipate, you know, and see how change might play out. You know, what change is going to affect us, and what can we do about it? So I think those are some of the key skills. And I think your second part of the question was on the how. And really interesting there. I think that the technologies of learning are really not just the technology in terms of hard technology, but the soft or social technology of learning. We're making some great advances there as well. And you know, if I had to put a meta learning technology, it's just, you know, learning by doing. Right. In certainly there's a role for instruction in theory, but how do we tie that to practice? How do we increasingly tie knowledge into the towards the situation in which you're going to use it? I think, you know, and that's not only goes for the university or the K through 12, but, you know, the training it on the job, you know. Rather than just talk about something in a classroom with lots of PowerPoints, how can we use virtual and real situations to actually, you know, learn by doing, you know, try out the knowledge in the situation where it's being used, practice, get feedback, and try it again. So I think that's the kind of learning by doing model is certainly one that's a great promise for us ahead.
Yeah, you know, USC has an Institute for Creative Technologies that I visited last year, and they had a really interesting learning simulation for, I believe it was incoming officers to the military. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times these guys are only 18 years old, and they're expected to command guys who are, you know, in their 30s. Who have completely different life experiences, and it runs them through a variety of simulations so that they can understand how to react in those situations. So one of them was, you know, a guy who's going through a tough relationship, and, you know, you normally think about an officer giving military orders, but here in this case, he's got to make sure his guys have their head in the game, so to speak. So he needs to know sort of what to say and what not to say to the guys. And, you know, it showed them running through various dialogues so that when they got something wrong, they were notified, and then they were able to go back through and sort of understand why. That type of technology seems really interesting mm-hmm. to me for regular corporations, you know, really a variety of places where you can potentially do customer service training on it, you know, how to interact with other employees. So instead of, you know, watching the old video on, you know, I think the traditional one is that corporate video on sort of what not to say to your colleagues, you know,
harassment
and stuff like that. Instead of watching that video, you know, maybe it is having people interact with this virtual, you know, in that case it was a virtual person. So they go through the simulation, and, you know, this way you're actually learning sort of on the job. Or
and teach a week-long course. We call it boot camp for foresight, right? And Monday morning I say, you know, our goal is at the end, you know, when you go back to wherever you are in your organization, and you get the green light that says, you know, help us create a new vision for the organization, or do a forecast on 3D printing, whatever it might be. You get, and you're staring at the blank screen, and there's no one there to help you. Are you going to know what to do? And I think that's, you know, I felt like sometimes, you know, you go through this training, and then you get that moment, you get the order, and you sit there and go, I don't know. I don't even know where to start. It's like, yeah. That we can't have that. We can't have it. We can't afford it. So, you know, our approach to learning, training, and such is that, you know, I may not know exactly what to do, but I know where to start and I know where to look, and because I've practiced, and, you know, I'm not scared stiff. I go, all right, I know what to do. We practice that. The first thing you do, and, you know, things start to roll. So I think that's kind of the learn by doing model that I'm suggesting. Is like, you know, you can hit the ground running.
I absolutely like that. And, you know, let me ask you one more question about some of the skills, going back to the skills that we talked about, critical thinking, systems thinking, creativity, and foresight. When I think about my elementary school education, my high school education, these were not skills that were focused on. They like to say that, you know, they wanted us to focus on, you know, say strategic thinking, but, you know, overall you're talking about literature classes, history classes, you know, math and science, things that are sort of always been taught the same way over and over. Doesn't the education system need to take this into account as well, in terms of changing curriculum and trying to add these skills in so that it's not just in a master's program where, you know, you've...
Absolutely. I mean, and I think some have got the clue, but probably more have not. And, boy, if you think about what we're, you know, the way we're teaching, we'll call it the old or traditional model, I mean, we're teaching kids to be computers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to kind of tie back to our automation trend, all of those jobs are going to be gone. You know, so we're, you know, kids who are stuck in that kind of being brought up in that kind of a learning environment are, you know, they're being obsoleted before they even have a chance. And if you look at, you know, where computers are, at least at this stage of the game, are still weak, it's in the things we just talked about, the higher level thinking skills of creativity, pattern, you know, all that. So, right, not only are those skills, you know, essential, I mean, it just makes sense in terms of where the job market is heading, because when you think about your own career, one of the things you want to be thinking about, you know, is this something a computer is going to be doing in a, you know, next year or in a few years? And, you know, how do I position myself in a way that, you know, I'm not in a job that's going to soon be obsolete? I think we're doing a disservice to kids if we're, you know, if we're training them to be computers, because computers, if you will be cheaper.
Andy, thank you, you know, really for your time and talking about the future of work with us. I mean, it's really incredible, and I know the two of us could sit and talk for hours about, you know, other types of emerging technologies in the office space and sort of what new things might pop up and challenge the work environment. So really appreciate it. And, you know, I really want to recommend people follow you on Twitter, you know, follow your blog at, you know, andyhindsight.com.
Thank you.
Put out really great work. People should go out and, you know, look you up and make sure they're buying your book and taking your class at the University of Houston. I think foresight really is one of those really critical skills that people need to develop, and we're hardwired as humans to be very short-term thinkers. I mean, it's fight or flight, right? So we're sort of used to that fight or flight mechanism, and we need to be thinking a lot longer term here.
Always fun to get together, Mike. Like you say, we could do it for hours, but I think we covered some nice juicy topics for the listeners.
Absolutely.
Andy Hines and Michael Vidiken, thank you for being on the Future in Focus radio show on the Incandescent Radio Network. Andy, we look forward to talking to you more, and we want to encourage our listeners to also stay tuned for the August issue of Future in Focus magazine that will feature Andy talking about women in the workforce, which will be another fascinating conversation. So thank you, gentlemen. Have a great weekend. It's a Friday here, and we look forward to having a great time and being back in touch with you soon. So to all of our listeners, thank you so much. This is Hope Katz Gibbs from the Incandescent Radio Network. Stay tuned for more.